This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Dan Hurley. Since 1970, federal law has listed marijuana as a Category 1 controlled substance with no accepted medical use. But beginning 12 years ago, actions on the state level have ignored that listing. Since 1996, 29 states and the District of Columbia have made medical marijuana legal, and 8 states have made recreational marijuana legal. The Trump administration is of two minds. Attorney General Jeff Sessions says he intends to vigorously enforce the federal statute. But on Friday, President Trump said the administration will support a bipartisan bill that was introduced last week to end the federal ban. With medical marijuana scheduled to be available this fall in Ohio, what happens to pre-employment drug testing, the concept of drug-free workplaces, rights under the American Disabilities Act? To explore those and other questions, we are joined today by an attorney with the Labor and Employment Group of Voorhees. He's a partner there, Andrew Kaplan, the Director of Client Relations with Strategic HR, Inc., Kathleen Snyder. She has 15 years of experience advising employers with from 10 to 100 employees on human resources issues, and writer for the Denver-based media firm Marijuana Business Daily, Lisa Bernard Kuhn. She may be known to listeners through her work over the years with the Cincinnati Enquirer and WCPO-TV and WCPO.com. To join our discussion, call 513-419-7100 or email us at talk@wvxu.org. We are on Facebook and Twitter as well. Welcome, everybody. Glad to have you here.
Thank you.
Thanks for having
today.
Us.
So, Andy, let's just start out with a basic question. What happens this fall when the Ohio law goes into application and they actually begin to roll it out? These things are supposed to happen by September 8th, but they're probably not. Everything's being pushed back. Who knows exactly when? But what happens to long-established, say, for example, pre-employment drug testing?
Well, that's a good question. And pre-employment drug testing under the new Ohio law is certainly still permissible. There's nothing that has changed in that regard for employers. They can do it. The Ohio law gives employers all the discretion they need to do what they want to do. So, for example, they don't have to accommodate marijuana if they don't want to in any way. They can continue to have a zero tolerance policy. They can continue to do drug testing, including pre-employment testing. Now, they certainly have within their rights and their discretion to make a decision that they're going to accommodate. And one way to do that would be to either stop testing for marijuana or to make an accommodation if someone with a medical marijuana card tests positive and not rule that person out for employment.
So they could continue to do drug testing and they have the option of just not looking at marijuana results, or they can continue to test for everything, including marijuana, and take that into account. Is that right?
That's absolutely true.
So it's very, very broad. Kathleen, as you talk to various employers in the region, and I'm not sure, have they focused on this yet? And if so, what's going on out there right now to get ready for the implementation of this law in Ohio?
I think what a lot of employers are looking at, there's a number of things to consider. There's a safety risk. There's a cultural risk. I do have employers, and even before this has been going into effect, I do have employers that stopped testing for marijuana. So they still will do a pre-employment drug screen, testing for cocaine, testing for opiates, testing for heroin, those types of drugs, but they just don't include marijuana on that.
Because they don't think it's significant? They don't care? I mean, what's sort of being said when you don't do that?
A little bit of that. And mind you, a number of companies that I know that are doing this, they're not broadcasting it that they're doing it. That's just a decision that they've made. One of the challenges that we've had in the HR world and just from the hiring perspective, it's a very tight job market. And so it's hard to find good people. And if we're holding tight to that pre-employment drug screen, you're ruling folks out. And we hear from countless employers saying, I can't find, you know, if I find good people, if I find somebody that I think could be a fit, they can't pass the drug test. Now, this isn't for everyone. And for a company who is considering this, you need to consider, what's the nature of the position? Is there a safety risk? Are they going to be operating any kind of heavy equipment or anything like that? Are they going to be driving at all? I mean, you have to look at all of the parameters of what that might be for a company to decide, no, we're going to forego testing for marijuana. So it's not for everybody. You need to make sure you're making an informed, educated decision if the organization decides to go that route.
Lisa Bernard-Kuhn, you have sort of a national perspective on this. How has this been rolled out in other states that maybe have adopted medical marijuana sometime in the last few years? And what is that? What are the implications? How is that rolled out in various other places?
Well, you'll see, you know, many of the states have taken the approach that Ohio has taken, and they've given employers the discretion to continue doing the pre-employment testing and to do the, you know, on-the-job testing as they choose. You do see some states that will support employees' rights who are medical marijuana users and have the legal right to use medical marijuana. I think there's about less than a dozen states that have some laws on the books right now supporting those employees. You know, this is evolving very quickly. You know, more than half of the states have some kind of legal marijuana laws on the books now. And so, as was mentioned, employers really are digging in and trying to understand, how does this, you know, play out in the workplace?
So, Andy, let me ask you this question. Under the current law, what are what employers may decide is in their best interest, but what are their legal responsibilities in terms of marijuana?
Well, there are a couple of things to think about there. One of them is, and this is following up on something Kathleen said, if you're talking about people in safety-sensitive positions that are governed by Department of Transportation regulations, this could be truck drivers, for example, there is still a zero-tolerance policy at the federal level. And if an employee tests positive, that employee has to be pulled even if it's medical marijuana. So even though the employer has discretion, you got to know, as Kathleen said earlier, what positions are you talking about? Also, if you're a federal contractor, you got to be mindful of the fact that your federal contract will be placed in jeopardy if you don't maintain a drug-free workplace. So there are some serious legal implications with even choosing to accommodate if you're doing that because you want to be a compassionate employer.
So, Kathleen, to be a federal contractor, mm-hmm. does that mean that you're doing any business with the federal government? I mean, that could be pretty broad, actually.
It can be pretty broad because you get into federal contracts, you get into a subcontractor of someone that has a federal contractor. So, yeah, there can be a fairly significant trickle down there. And again, if a company is going to make a decision that they feel that they want to do this, they need to look at all aspects of it, and that is definitely one to consider. The other thing that a company needs to keep in mind is if you're going to start to make exceptions, you need to have a level of consistency. So the rule of thumb is to keep it within a certain class of position or a certain – so drivers have a certain level of, you know, Department of Transportation requirements and things like that. Maybe the person up in the call center doesn't have to meet those requirements. But again, you want to make sure you've got some level of consistency. And I always advise employers, it's you know, if you're going to do it for one, you're going to have to look long and hard to make sure you're ready to do this for the next one that comes along and the one after that and the one after that. So it's a significant decision for the organization to make. You just want to make sure you're well informed in doing so.
Lisa, what is the – in states where this has already gone into effect, it hasn't gone into effect yet in Ohio, what's the difference between use during – on the site when you're working versus on your own time and coming into work the next morning type of thing? But, you know,
is anybody allowing people to use marijuana on site, I guess is the question I'm really asking.
Yeah, you know, I think in states where you have legal marijuana laws on the books, you know, there's some, and this is, again, still evolving, you know, it depends on whether or not you're talking about medical marijuana or a state that has recreational marijuana laws on the books. Broadly speaking, you know, recreational marijuana use while on the job is not accepted. It's very much treated like alcohol. You wouldn't want to show up to your employer having drink beer just before work or some other form of alcohol. Very much recreational marijuana is treated that way by employers. And again, on the medicinal side, those states that have taken up rules that allow for medicinal use, there's still a lot of pushback about using medicinal marijuana on the job. And employers are really grappling with this and trying to figure out what does that look like. It's all still very new.
Andy, I think a lot of what we're seeing, too, is treating it. There are a lot of other legal prescription drugs that can have an impact on an individual as far as your reaction times, your mental acuity. I mean, all of those kind of things. And I think what we're seeing some of is treat it similar to those. I mean, if somebody is impaired, if you will, based because of a legal prescription, you're still going to have an impact on their work, and it's still going to have an impact on how well they're able to perform their job, whether they're in a high-risk position or not. I know, you know, there are certain medications, even sometimes a cold medication or like a higher-level prescription cold medication or something can make your mind a little foggy. So I think it's those kind of things to consider, and to an extent, it also becomes, if you choose to go that route, then we start to look at a performance issue, and then you start to look at the accommodation that has to go with that, and then the Americans with Disabilities Act can, depending on the condition, depending on why they're taking it, it does open up quite a few doors there that you just need to be aware of.
Okay, so let's pick up a couple of things here. One, the Americans for Disability Act. This is another federal law, but there are also state laws that mimic that, adjust it in one way or another. For people who have disabilities, I think the question is, for people who have disabilities that marijuana seemingly can be helpful for, what rights do they have here, and what's the role of the law? Andy?
Well, Dan, when it comes to the Americans with Disabilities Act, the law is pretty clear, and I haven't seen a case to the contrary on this. I know there's one case at least out there that's challenging this, but the ADA does not protect medical marijuana users. And the reason for that is the ADA is a federal law. It does not protect current users of illegal drugs, and marijuana is illegal at the federal level. So it's really as simple as that. I don't think there's a court in the land, and Lisa and Kathleen will correct me if they've heard otherwise, but I don't think there's a court in the land that has ruled that the ADA offers any protection at all. Now, there are similar state non-discrimination laws, and there was a case that came out of Massachusetts last year, a very interesting decision, in which the court said that a medical marijuana user who was terminated didn't have any protection under Massachusetts's marijuana law because that didn't have any non-discrimination language in it for the workplace, but might have protection under the state's general non-discrimination law because she had a disability and an accommodation involving medical marijuana might be a reasonable accommodation for that.
I see Kathleen sort of shaking her head. Yes, in agreement. Is that?
Yeah, we do. It's challenging. I mean, every single case is different. The biggest thing to I always approach these types of issues of trying to find balance. What's the balance between protecting the interests of the organization and protecting the liability and the interests of the organization, and also trying to find a way to do what's best for both the employee and the organization itself? It's tricky. Not going to lie.
Lisa, anything to add to this, or is?
Yeah, you know, you do see these lawsuits pop up, and some of them, you know, as more states take up medical marijuana or recreational marijuana laws, some of these lawsuits are getting even more nuanced. You know, California, you know, in terms of more states are looking to sort of better clarify for employers and employees, you know, what the rules could or should be. You know, California lawmakers, they just shot down a proposal that would have offered, you know, some workplace accommodations for employees to use medical marijuana. That kind of came as a shock to most in the industry because you think about California and what's underway there, rollout of a newly defined recreational program. Medical marijuana laws have been on the books for years here. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, what kind of new lawsuits continue to pop up and what kind of new proposals from the industry and from lawmakers we're going to continue to see here.
California's sort of been at this longer than anybody else, right? Their law passed in 1996, and they sort of broke the situation. So the fact that it's maturing there is probably not surprising that they're at the point they're grappling with these issues.
Well, they are.
Yeah, not surprising. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry, Lisa. They're way ahead of Ohio, of course, because we haven't even had the system in operation yet, so we don't have any court cases. And I think Lisa's point is a really good one. You have to know in every state in which you operate what the laws are, what the regulations are, and now, very importantly, what the courts have said in the interpretation of those laws, because those interpretations have not always been obvious from the language of the law itself.
They have to be worked out in court.
Exactly.
That's case law.
I'll chime in there, coming from the employer's perspective and from the HR perspective of things. Quite frankly, if I'm considering taking any kind of action in this area, whether it's hiring someone, I've got an accommodation for medical marijuana, I'm looking to terminate someone because they've tested positive. Quite frankly, I'm going to call my friend attorney Andy over here, and I'm going to get some clearance from my employment attorney before I do so, because there are so many nuances and because there's so many gray areas. There's a certain fallback right now, I think, for Ohio employers, because that federal law is in place. Bottom line, it's illegal federally, so that can back us up. So then we fall back to consistency. But if that federal law changes, pay attention, because that's going to change a lot of different areas.
Lisa, let me throw this at you. How seriously do you think the effort in Congress that was submitted? It was a bipartisan bill that was dropped last week, and then President Trump said that, sort of on his way to get on the helicopter, that they would be supporting that. From your perspective, how significant is that bill?
It's pretty significant. And I can tell you, you know, I've been hearing, you hear a couple different timeframes thrown out across the industry at how quickly we might see some change at a federal level. You know, some say that the 2018 election could really be pivotal. You know, I hear that, you know, by 2021, and these are from groups who, you know, have lobbyists on Capitol Hill and in state houses across the country, that, you know, by 2021, we'll have some really clear definitions relative to, you know, the federal legality of, you know, of marijuana on a recreational and medicinal level. You know, you just need to look north to Canada to see what's rolling out there, right? By the end of this year, they're going to have some recreational laws on the books. It'll be legal recreationally across the country. And there's some pretty clear delineation of in Canada relative to medical marijuana use for employers. You know, individuals who are using medical cannabis, and employers are required by law to accommodate those medicinal users the same way that they would anyone.
What does that mean, Lisa? What does that mean, they're required to accommodate? Does that mean they have to provide them space to ingest or smoke during?
No, they have to accommodate them like they would any other employee with a disability or a medical condition that would require a prescription drug use, right? And so we were having the conversation earlier about, you know, there still are many prescription drugs out there that employers and employees do not want to use on the job. You know, hydrocodone, opioids, there's very, you know, employers have often very strict rules around those uses. However, when you look to Canada, recreational drug use, employers certainly still have the right to prohibit that in the workplace. So once we get some clarity around what's happening at the federal level in the U.S. Perhaps there are some clear answers for employers. Maybe the other two folks have something else to lend on that.
Well, Andy, let me sort of try to put a point on that. If the federal law changes to allow more local decision-making, does that make it simpler or more complicated for employers, especially employers who have locations in multiple states? Because then the standards aren't – they may vary from state to state. I mean, this may just complicate the situation.
Well, I guess I think it would make it a little bit simpler because even now with federal law as it stands, the laws vary from state to state. You've got 29 or 30 states that have legalized it,
right,
and every one of them has a different law and in many cases differing and conflicting court decisions too. So it's a big mess already. We're not going to clear it all up by getting a decision from the federal government or a law that says that we're going to toss this into states' rights and let them make the decisions. But what it does do is it takes away a little bit of the cover for the employer, in Ohio, for example, who says, I want to be zero tolerance because I'm going to line up with federal law.
Lisa, what the fact that the federal law stands as it does today, in places like Colorado, for example, or California, where there's recreational marijuana use that's legal, what are the problems that poses? Because there's these conflicting state and federal laws, what does that pose on a business person who's trying to run a business that's related to recreational marijuana or medical?
Yeah. Sure, you know, taking aside just the employee factor for a minute. You have so many challenges right now because of this state-federal conflicting issue here. I mean, just look at the banking issue that these companies face right now. Many of them cannot find a bank or an institution that will take their money, right? So they're operating on an all-cash basis. And you continue to hear from the industry that this just isn't sustainable. You know, they're locking their money in vaults. They're hiring. They're paying exorbitant. If they do have a bank that they're working with, they're paying some exorbitant fees. And so that in and of itself is an issue that folks in the industry are really calling to be tackled. Many other examples of where, you know, this state-federal issue continues to be just a major issue for these companies that truly are wanting to operate legitimately and are incredibly savvy business operators. We see a lot of money coming into this space, and they want to legitimize this industry, and the federal-state conflict is really challenging them in doing that.
Kathleen, from an HR point of view, if the federal law disappears and you're operating in a state which legalizes medical or recreational marijuana, what does that do to the employer's insurance plan? If marijuana is prescribed by a doctor, is it going to be covered by the insurance?
That's a very good question. I will be honest, I have not come across that one yet of whether it would be covered by insurance or not if it's made legal. There are a lot of legal, legitimate drugs on the market that are not covered by insurance. So it'll be interesting to see what direction that goes. I think there's a couple different things to keep in mind. If the federal law and state laws, or the Ohio state law anyway, and other state laws, right now they're very opposite. It is illegal federally, whereas as we've said, a lot of states have their laws. If those do happen to become a little bit more in line, it would almost seem like, and pure speculation, that marijuana in the workplace is kind of treated as alcohol is, as you mentioned. You can't, you know, no, an employee cannot show up impaired by alcohol or impaired by marijuana. You know, so from the recreational perspective of things, from the medical perspective of things, and I like to think too, there's a very distinct difference between medical marijuana and the recreational use. Medical marijuana, and I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe this is in the Ohio law, cannot be smoked from the medical perspective. There are other ways that it's ingested So that it just has a different feel to it, quite frankly, than the picture you get in your mind of the guy in the back room smoking the joint.
Okay. Andy, we're going to run out of time here. What's your understanding about the insurance question?
Well, I think it depends on what the federal law says. I saw Cory Gardner and Elizabeth Warren the other day on TV, and they were talking about their bipartisan bill. They weren't very specific about what it says, and I think it's possible that Lisa may know more about that. But I think there's a difference between prosecutorial discretion and legalization at the federal level. And I don't know if they're talking about legalization or just getting out of the way of the states, because as long as it's a Schedule I drug and remains so classified under the Controlled Substances Act, it will still technically be illegal. And insurance companies are not willing to put it on their plans. And the Bureau of Workers' Compensation here in Ohio is not willing to pay for it. They'll only pay for drugs that are FDA approved and that are can be prescribed by a doctor, which marijuana can only be recommended and can be gotten at a drugstore, and you're not going to get marijuana there.
I've got about 40 seconds left. Lisa, final thought?
Yeah, I think you're going to continue to see, you know, lots of work done to figure out what we need to do with this on the federal level just to help these businesses operate. On the insurance side, the past comments were right. You know, there aren't any insurers out there that are covering medical marijuana. New York just allowed medical visits pertaining to marijuana certification to be covered. So we're going to keep seeing this evolve.
Okay. We're doing this interview in process. This whole thing is in a flow. So thank you very much to Andrew Kaplan, Kathleen Snyder, and Lisa Bernard-Kuhn.
Thanks for listening to this podcast of Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Archives of our programs are available on the website wvxu.org. I'm Dan Hurley.